Hello again. I'm Margot de Coatsworth. Welcome to Ask Margot. I need to introduce myself each time so that if this is your first encounter with Ask Margot, you get an idea of who I am to presume to give you advice. So I'm going to have to be creative in order for you not to hear me say the same thing each time. I thought that I'd take one thing I do each program and just talk about that, so you don't have to hear me on repeat every time. Today then, by way of my introduction, I thought I'd talk about RTT, Rapid Transformational Therapy. That's the therapy I'm qualified in. I love talking about it, and you'll understand why as I tell you a bit more. I came across RTT by chance, which actually I don't believe in, chance that is. So let's say I came across it by divine arrangement or destiny. Anyway, whichever. I recognised it as the missing link or key to my work. It's the key that opens the door to understanding why things happen to us, why we get sick, why we repeatedly do things that aren't good for us, always ending up with the wrong boys, always choosing the wrong kind of girl, never seeming to be able to achieve a breakthrough with health or weight. You know what I mean. The thing that's so great about RTT is that it is like a key that opens a door to the subconscious, because that's where all the answers are. Your brilliant mind has the answers to why you have issues in your life that keep you stuck or sick or small. Turning the key opens the door, and then we can reframe that program that's running in the background and set up a whole new one. It's quite fantastic. It really sets people free. Right. Enough about me and what I do. Next time I'll tell you something else. Back to you and your questions. The first question today is from Davina. She's written in with a question about apologies, and you may find a little of yourself in this. Hello, Margot. I'm a very nice person, and I try to be kind and considerate. I always defer to others, too much, but I find that's my default position. I apologise all the time, even when there's nothing to apologise for. Oh dear, even talking about it now makes me feel apologetic. I want to stop and not be the one who's seen as sort of soft and spineless and taking the blame for everything. I even do it when there's nothing to apologise for or when the other person is obviously the one at fault. Please help. Well, I can completely get what you're talking about, Davina. I'm quite a lot like that myself. My brother said to me once, I apologise enough for the whole room. Sometimes I write things on my walls in chalk quite a bit, important things and quotes from movies or that I come across in life. And I'd like to tell you this one by way of a bit of light relief before we get serious about your question. I was watching a movie with Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick. And Anna was forever apologising for everything. And Blake said to her, and this is what's written on my wall, "Baby, if you apologise again, I'm going to have to slap the sorry out of you." Now that I said that, I'm not sure that it was really wall-worthy. But it did make me think, apologise only when necessary. Otherwise, don't. Back to your question, Davina. Let's look at this as a positive. If you were a shabby person, you wouldn't be apologising because you wouldn't care. You don't want to upset anyone or have disharmony around you. That makes you a peacemaker, and that's truly admirable. We need more peacemakers in the world. The trick is to know where to draw the line so you're not apologising for things you shouldn't be taking on, and that's what we'll focus on today. Here's one way to start making a change. If you're greeting somebody in writing, text, email, or in person, never make the first words out of your mouth, especially if you're often late. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry I haven't been in touch. I'm sorry I forgot. I'm sorry I didn't dot dot dot. Just stop doing that. People who hear that from someone all the time get annoyed by it and lose respect for that person. They find it disingenuous, especially if they're always late. If you're always apologetic, you're seen as a weak person, and we're stopping that today. I would start with watching your first greeting to someone and no longer allow yourself to apologise at that time. If you're always late, you can stop being late, and that'll be one less thing to apologise for. Remember, you get to choose and decide. You can decide no longer to be a late person. I used to be, and I'm not anymore. Just make the first greeting positive. Lovely to see you again, rather than I'm sorry I haven't been in touch. Can you get the difference with that? Do you see what the idea is? The energy changes if you make it a positive. Be aware of everything you say and stop yourself from falling into your old patterns. Rehearse before that situation comes up. Ask yourself, what kind of person do you want to be and how would that person speak in the upcoming situation? I find that if words fail, a big smile always works. It diffuses anything untoward. It must be genuine though, because we all have a finely tuned radar for fake or forced smiles. You need to begin observing yourself, asking yourself how you want to behave in situations with others. Ban the I'm sorry words and find another way of saying sorry if you really are at fault and want to say so. Say, I'll endeavour to change that in the future. Do you feel the different energy of that? It comes from a place of strength. Now I'll just swap my coaching hat for my therapy one. If you feel there's something more deep-seated going on, it will be worth looking at why this is how you are. That means uncovering what your subconscious program around that saying sorry thing is. It would be remiss of me not to say that, because trying to smooth over the surface of something that has a deeper root cause will not enable long-lasting change. Recapping then, Davina. Number one, decide what kind of person you want to be in life. Number two, observe your conversation and you will see what you need to change. Number three, never greet someone with I'm sorry. Number four, get some more help if you feel there's something deep that needs uncovering. And number five, when in doubt, don't apologise, just smile. Thank you for your question, Davina, and I'm not at all sorry that you wrote in with it. Thank you. Number two in our questions today. Margot, Max here. I can't seem to get a decent night's sleep. I just never know. Will I sleep? Won't I sleep? Will it be broken? Will it be restless? What's going on? I just want to go to bed and conk out until 7 a.m. every night, like I did when I was young. Going a bit mad here. What's your advice? Well, let's start with a purely practical, Max. We'll talk about nighttime habits and the science of sleep. There's a most excellent masterclass by a chap called Matthew Paul Walker. He's an English scientist and a professor of neuroscience and psychology at the University of California. If you've ever seen those masterclass series advertised, his masterclass on sleep is excellent. He says sleep is our superpower. He's also on a TED Talks if you want to look him up there. Well, I'm just going to give you the everyman's super simple version of the things that he might explain fully in the science behind sleep. The first one is, if you drink coffee in the afternoon or evening, that has to stop. Sorry, it's tragic, I know. It took me ages to figure that out. I used to go to sleep easily and then wake up in the middle of the night, absolutely wide awake. I used to joke about it and think perhaps God was waking me up to tell me something important. He was, but it was only to say, stop drinking coffee late at night. You may fall asleep, but you'll wake up before you want to. So no coffee in the latter part of the day. Switch to some kind of sleepy tea or some pretend thing. At first, if you're like me, it'll make you a bit angry, but then you'll come to love it because it gives you back control, and that's what we all want. Number two. The other thing we are told to do is to glide into a cruisy pre-sleep routine, such as no bright overhead lights, because then your brain thinks it's lunchtime. No screen time at the wind down of the evening, and no excessive mental stimulation. Try to establish an end of the day routine like you would teach to a baby. A bath or something similar at the end of the day is a kind of ritual you should start. you're training your mind and your body to do what you want them to do. So you have to kind of program that. Number three, keep regular times. Set an alarm so you switch off your daytime matters. Stop working on clever ideas, watching horror movies, and begin to go into your little Zen evening pre-sleep routine. You could even do it with meditative music. Now that we've covered those practicalities, there's one other thing you can do for yourself, Max, when you relax into bed at night, and that is to have a chat to your subconscious mind, telling it of your expectations and demands for a deep, undisturbed sleep. You can do this by listening to a hypnotic sleep recording. Your mind loves and responds to repetition, so you can retrain it to sleep beautifully by playing a recording that tells your body sleep is happening and that it's going to be deep and restorative. Maybe one day we'll do something like that on this program. Not for sleep, but for something else. I'll check with management. But if you want to find a recording for sleep, there's a free one on my website, which is margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. So, Max, there's one more thing I'd like to do for you, and it's what I call a power blessing. I do this at the end of my therapy sessions. It's like a kind of affirmation on steroids. You can write and record something like this for yourself and then play it at night. Here we go. May your good nighttime habits and expectations lead to your sleep being deep and undisturbed, while you regenerate, renew, and revitalize every cell of your body, so when you wake, you feel fully rested, restored, and energized for your new day. I'd like you to take a moment to focus on these words we've just used. Say them slowly and intentionally, taking on their meaning. Let's try it now. Just close your eyes and focus on these words. Relax, rest, regenerate, renew, restore, revitalize, and re-energize. Can you feel that? There's a kind of power in those words when you say it with intention. And if you say those words to yourself every day, Max, as you drift into sleep, you will be working magic. Focus on the words, allow them to infiltrate your being, instruct your mind with them. Try it and let us know how you go. And thank you for your question. Our third question today is from Lucy Liu. Sometimes people say things to each other, and I just don't know how to handle it. I had an experience like that recently from a girlfriend, and it was the most vile thing anyone had ever said to me. And worse still, it wasn't even something I'd done. It's so hard to shake off that kind of stuff, and I don't know how to deal with it. It just makes me feel yuck. What do you suggest is the best way to not allow that? Well, I think there are a couple of things to think about with this question, Lucy. The first is a bit sticky, but really ought to be considered. And that is, if we do indeed live in a world of attraction or resonance, I like the word resonance, which is defined as the synchronous vibration of a neighboring object. Ask yourself why you might have attracted that behavior. Look into yourself to see what there is that may have drawn that kind of response from someone. This is not an easy thing to do, but make yourself do it anyway. I've had to. You need to see if there's an attitude in you that allows for this. For example, if people repeatedly treat you with disrespect, ask why. Is it perhaps because you need to upgrade the respect you have for yourself? I'm a big fan of asking why in order to, well, find out the reason behind things. If we don't know why something happens, how do we stop it happening again? Also, there'll be something deeper behind the thing that person has said or done, something about them. Hurt often manifests as anger. If someone is jealous, it will be because they don't feel enough themselves. They won't be feeling good about themselves, and people who do feel good about themselves just don't have any need to behave like that. The next thing I'd like to mention is a proverb. I think it might be Buddhist. I heard it once and it's always stuck in my mind. If someone holds a gift out to you and you don't take it from them, you don't accept it, who is holding the gift? That's right, they are. So if someone wants to give you something that you don't want and you don't take it or take it on, it remains with them. I think this is comforting when it comes to something horrible they might be offering you. They just get to keep it. It's part of them and not you. The last thing I want to say is that we all need to have a no-go zone. That means no one ever hits you. No one treats you with contempt. No one makes you afraid. And no one makes you feel worthless, insignificant, or like you're not enough. No one. I have coined a phrase that I now use. My family know it now, and it's not even if it's the apocalypse. Meaning, not even if the world was ending, would that thing be okay? It means that thing would never be acceptable no matter what the circumstances or the perceived provocation or how badly that person was feeling or how drunk or high or under pressure they were. Nothing but nothing, not even the end of the world, would make that behavior okay. You decide where that line is for you, and remember that not even if it's the apocalypse will you allow anyone to invade your no-go zone. We all get to choose our standards, and I know, Lucy, it's hard to shake off that awful feeling you have when something happens like you've described. My brother used to call it being slimed. Animals shake themselves to kind of de-stress after a fight or flight or challenging encounter. Then they just go back to feeling zen as though nothing had happened. Cats do it. African animals do it. We aren't quite so good at that. But a good shakeout would probably help us to feel we are actively letting go of something unwanted. Could try that. And perhaps it's time to set that friend free. We get to choose who we surround ourselves with, and we must make good choices if we want people around us who support and encourage us and who see our value. So, recapping, look into yourself to see if there's a reason for it. Don't take on any nasty gift. Decide what's unacceptable, even in the apocalypse. Shake it off. And consider that person is coming from a place where they're not happy in themselves, and also consider that it may be time to set them free as a friend. You'll know which applies in your situation. Hope that helps. Now, number four, our last question is from Jean-Luc, and here's what he says. You're talking about hypnotherapy, but hypnosis seems a bit scary to me. Why would I hand over control of my mind to someone else under any circumstances? It doesn't seem wise or smart. I've seen those shows where people act like monkeys or are told to do ridiculous things, and afterwards they can't even remember it. Shouldn't that make us all suspicious of any kind of hypnosis? You know how when people ask a question on shows, sometimes the person answering comes back and says, "Great question." And often it's not a great question, it's just a perfectly obvious one. But this actually is a really important question because it's one that needs clarifying for so many people. Before I knew anything about hypnotherapy, I was quite anti for the very reason you mentioned. Why would a smart person give up control to anyone else? Well, firstly, that stagey show of hypnosis is absolutely not what hypnotherapy is about. The process we take people into is gentle and easy. It's just a state of deep relaxation. I say to people that we give their conscious chitter-chatter reasoning mind a little time out while we speak directly to their amazing subconscious, and that their conscious mind is just drifting off while their subconscious is listening intently. You know how you drive from A to B and afterwards you can't even remember quite how you got there? You were just on autopilot. Of course, if you needed to react to something, you would do it in an instant. But this kind of autopilot way of being is a bit like the state of hypnosis you would be in. It's very easy, and we're doing it all the time, actually, in life. At no time is the client's control given up. They can always say, no, that's not what I think, not what I feel. They can say, no, I don't want to talk about that. They can say, I'd like to stop now. They have full control. The thing I find so fascinating is that quietening the conscious reasoning mind enables someone to access what's already in their subconscious without trying to figure it out. The answers are immediate because your brilliant subconscious already knows. You have the answers within you. It knows why you behave the way you do, why things are sticking points for you, why you have those annoying patterns that keep showing up. It's all there, but it's under the surface. It can be discovered and uncovered by other means, an aha moment, a divine revelation, or methods like hypnotherapy. But I'm such an advocate of what I've seen RTT can do, because I know that it can guide a client to find the reason why in just one session. We are really smart creatures. We don't like not to understand things. We need to know why things are. The whole of our progress of our society has been based on that. And if we don't know why they are and we don't care for them the way they are, then we can change them. Who wants to live a sort of dumbed down existence because we don't know what's going on? We're worth so much more than that, and we're capable of finding out the why behind the things that happen in our lives. Right, I'm off my soapbox now. But hypnotherapy aside, my absolute quest in life is to help people see their potential and to step into that life that we're all designed for. I hope, Jean-Luc, that that little explanation of how hypnotherapy works answers your question. That was our last question for today. Don't forget to send your questions in either to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me at margounlimited.com. I talked to someone the other day who had an issue that bothered her. She'd been to see a couple of professionals about it, and their advice was to learn how to live positively with it. I'm afraid you'll never get that kind of advice from me. Not now, not ever, never. I'll always say we're meant for more than that. I want you to picture yourself sitting in a chair. Think about the range of movement you have. You can raise your arms, you can stretch them out. You can move your legs out in front of you, and you can cross them. You can twist from your waist. Sadly, that's often how we live our lives, restricted in what we can do because we are sitting in a seat and we don't realize we're designed to stand up. Now picture yourself standing up. Feel how great that feels to use your whole body to stretch your arms up to the sky, to stretch them out and swing your whole body with them. You can walk, run, and cover a whole lot of ground. You can skip and you can dance. That's what we're designed for. If you catch yourself with a sitting attitude to life, stop and think and tell yourself, I don't think so. I was born to stand. Try it and let us know how that feels and how it changes what shows up in your life. Now I'm going to deliver the message from the universe for today. When I receive these messages, I normally write them down. Sometimes they are softened by what I'm describing as the energy of a smile after a comment, so that if I say smiley face to you, you'll get a better sense of how whatever is delivered by the universe is intended to be received by us. There's a smiley face at the end of this message. So here we go. Thank you very much for spending this time with us. Here's today's message. Many of you are caught up in the stuff of your lives, and you find it hard to look away from that, to look up and to look within. You seek answers, but often you seek them from the stuff of life, when really the answers are to be found when you look up and when you look within. When you feel stuck and cornered, under pressure from life, take yourself apart, then breathe out what you don't want and breathe in what you choose for you. Look beyond the stuff, the detail, and the problems of your life and see who you really are. You are an incredible, timeless being of inestimable value. You are seen and appreciated by life itself, by me. Look up, ask your questions, then look within for the answers. That's where they are delivered. Smiley face. Thank you.
The program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.